Welcome to Knowing God in the Word, brought to you by the Word of Truth Ministry, publishers of Seed and Bread. I'm your host, Bob Juno, with Bible teacher Nathan Johnson. This radio program is for the purpose of helping listeners fulfill the greatest need we have as believers, to know God. Today, Nathan will continue his teaching series on the book of Judges with A Wedding for Samson. And now, Bible teacher Nathan Johnson.
Thank you, Bob. We have been studying the book of Judges, and through the lives and work of these judges, we can learn about God's works and ways. We saw that Israel had fallen again into idolatry in chapter 13, and this time they were enslaved to the Philistines 40 years. At last, Yahweh sent an angel, the angel of Yahweh, the Lord, to the wife of a man named Manoah to tell her that she would have a son, who would be a Nazarite set apart to the Lord from birth. And he told her, and finally her husband, about this child. Well, sure enough, the child was born, and they named him Samson. And he grew up, but I'm afraid that his parents maybe spoiled him a bit, figured this is God's great deliverer, and gave him whatever he wanted. So we see when he grows up, he has the idea he can do whatever he wants. He goes to a city that was supposed to belong to Israel, but at this time was pretty much under the control of the Philistines, and sees a Philistine girl there, and he thinks she's great, and he wants to marry her. Well, we saw his parents argued with him, "Aren't there any girls among your own brothers in the tribe of Dan, or even among all the other tribes of Israel? Aren't there any girls there that you could marry? Why would you go and marry one of these Philistines who isn't in relationship with our God?" But Samson didn't listen. He wanted what he wanted. Like I said, sounds like a spoiled child. So today we're looking at a wedding for Samson, starting in chapter 14 and verse 5 of Judges. So Samson went down to Timnah with his father and mother, and came to the vineyards of Timnah. Now to his surprise, a young lion came roaring against him. Now, well, lions aren't really in the Middle East at this time. At that time, lions were common in that part of the world. In fact, it appears that lions were spread from Africa all the way up and over into Asia and India, and there were lions the whole way. But in the time since, there are still lions in India, there are still lions in Africa, but a lot of the lions in the places in between have died out. Now, Middle Eastern lions, as far as we can tell, were a lot like the Indian variety now. That is, they're not quite the same as African lions. They're a bit smaller. The manes on the males aren't quite as big, but they're clearly related to the African lions, and at some point they were probably one. Now, there are lions all over the world. In fact, we have lions in America, only ours are the, we call them mountain lions or cougars. But there are lions all over the world, and there were lions in the Middle East at this time, although there aren't anymore. Well, he is passing through this vineyard on his way to Timnah, where his new bride-to-be is, and a young lion comes to attack him. Verse 6, "And the Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon him, and he tore the lion apart, as one would have torn apart a young goat, though he had nothing in his hand. But he did not tell his father or his mother what he had done." So what happens to Samson? Well, the power of the Spirit comes upon him. And the Spirit of the Lord gives power. He is the source of power, and he gives power. He's the giver, and he gives gifts. And here he gives Samson the power he needs to overcome this lion. Now he speaks of tearing apart a young goat. Now, I don't suppose you'd do that when the goat was alive. But say you had slaughtered a kid and were going to take it apart in order to get the meat off of it. You're butchering it. Well, a young goat you could tear apart by hand. You wouldn't even need a knife. Whereas a grown one, of course, you probably need a knife. You need some kind of help, some kind of tool to do it. But you could tear apart a kid. Well, for Samson, this lion is no different than a kid. He just tears it apart with his bare hands. Doesn't need a weapon to defeat it. Well, try that. No, I wouldn't suggest it. Now, notice he does this through the Spirit of the Lord. And this should tell us something. You know, when we tend to picture Samson, we picture him as this giant, muscular, like professional wrestler-looking guy. And the thing If I were to ask, could a professional wrestler guy do the things that Samson did? And the answer is no. At one point, Samson picks up the gates of a city. And city gates are so big and so heavy that they would crush you. I mean, the human frame couldn't bear him up. You couldn't carry him. Not to mention, he carries it miles and miles, finishes by carrying it uphill. I mean, the human body couldn't do that, no matter how muscular you were. So he does these things by the power of the Spirit. Now, if he's doing them by the power of the Spirit, does he have to be muscular? Well, no. He could just look like an average guy. He could be some skinny, little scholarly-looking guy. And he didn't have to be a big, giant He-Man type. Because what good does being a big, giant He-Man type do when it comes to doing impossible things? No, Samson did this by the Spirit of the Lord, not by giant muscles. And he might have been no larger or more impressive looking than anyone else. It's just he had the Spirit of the Lord to help him do these stunning feats. So after he tears apart this lion with his bare hands, we read in verse 7, then he went down and talked with the woman, and she pleased Samson well. So he continues on his way. He comes to Timnah. He talks to this woman he's decided he wants to marry, and she pleases him. Well, why? Well, I doubt it was her great personality. As we'll see her later on, she doesn't appear to have had a great personality at all. I think it was probably her look. She was probably hot-looking, and that's why she pleased him. And that is a pitfall that men can fall into, is that if a woman is beautiful, they figure she must be beautiful inside, too. No. Doesn't mean she's not. She could be beautiful inside, too. But she could also be really nasty inside. And beautiful outward looks don't always coincide with beautiful inward looks. They can, but they don't always. And oftentimes they don't. And so this woman pleased Samson. Well, I doubt it was for good godly reasons. Verse 8. After some time, when he returned to get her, he turned aside to see the carcass of the lion. And behold, a swarm of bees and honey were in the carcass of the lion. So they arranged the marriage, but it wasn't taking place right away. There were preparations and so forth. So some time passed. Now, we don't know how long some time is, but it could have been months. And it seems that this lion carcass has seriously begun to degrade. It's rotted away, and probably part of the bones, maybe the rib cage, are exposed. And a swarm of bees has decided this is a great place to build a hive. So nestled within this rotting lion carcass is a bee's nest. Well, that's a strange thing. I mean, I don't think bees usually choose a carcass to build their nest. So this is unusual. It's noteworthy. But look what Samson does, verse 9. He took some of it in his hands and went along eating. When he came to his father and mother, he gave some to them, and they also ate. But he did not tell them that he had taken the honey out of the carcass of the lion. So Samson takes the honey. And I wonder, how did he get rid of the bees? I mean, most people don't walk around with a smoker in their pocket. Does he just grab the honey and not care if he gets stung, or what does he do? Well, it doesn't say. Maybe he had some trick he used. But he gets the honey, and then as he goes on his way, he's eating it. Now understand, this should raise a big problem in our minds, because remember that Samson was a Nazarite. And as we talked about the rules of a Nazarite, Nazarites were not supposed to drink wine or any other kind of alcoholic drink or eat grapes or grape stems or grape skins or anything having to do with grapes. They were not supposed to cut their hair as long as they were Nazarites, which for Samson was a lifetime. And they were not supposed to go near a dead body. And yet Samson not only went near this dead body, he took honey out of it and started eating it. So Samson, by doing this, he more or less ignored his Nazarite vow. His attitude toward it was, well, it doesn't really matter. I'm not supposed to touch dead bodies, but who cares? He not only touched the dead lion, he took the honey out of it and was eating honey out of this dead lion. Now understand that a lion carcass would have made the honey unclean. Leviticus 5 and verse 2 says, if a person touches any unclean thing, whether it is the carcass of an unclean beast, or the carcass of unclean livestock, or the carcass of unclean creeping things, and he is unaware of it, he also shall be unclean and guilty. So even if Samson hadn't been a Nazirite. The carcass of a lion, since lions are not clean animals, they're not the kind of animals you eat, the carcass of a lion is unclean. I mean, obviously, clean animals, you take the meat and you eat it. Their carcasses are fine. But the carcasses of unclean animals made you unclean if you touched them. So even if Samson wasn't a Nazirite, he shouldn't have been eating honey out of a lion's carcass. But notice what he does. He takes some of this honey and gives it to his parents. So he not only defiles himself, makes himself unclean, breaks his Nazirite vow, he also gives honey to his parents and makes them unclean without telling them. And notice this, Leviticus 5:2 says, even if he's unaware of it, he's still unclean and guilty. So he brings guilt before God on his parents without telling them, along with bringing guilt on himself. We can see that Samson doesn't really value his relationship with the Lord like he should. Well, now we actually come to the marriage celebration and the riddle, starting in verse 10. It says, so his father went down to the woman, and Samson gave a feast there, for the young men used to do so. So his father comes to the woman, and this was according to their way of doing it. Of course, his father was the one who arranged the marriage, and she was now going to come into his father's family. Remember, every family was like a family business. And when a woman got married, she left her family business and therefore left her family. And she joined the family business of her husband, so she joined his family. And so he was welcoming this woman into his family, in spite of the fact that she was a Philistine. He didn't necessarily want to. He was still doing it because Samson insisted. And again, I think these parents probably spoiled Samson, let him get away with whatever he wanted. Well, we read that the marriage custom of the time was for Samson to give a feast. In fact, the feast was a week long, as we'll see later. Verse 11, and it happened, when they saw him, that they brought 30 companions to be with him. So the Philistines give him 30 companions. Now we might call these groomsmen. But notice your groomsmen are usually your friends. But these groomsmen are provided by the Philistines rather than by Samson. So what kind of men are these groomsmen? Well, they are godless Philistines, some of the enemies of Israel. This is the kind of people that Samson has involved in his wedding. Well, Samson decides to be clever. Verse 12, then Samson said to them, let me pose a riddle to you. If you can correctly solve and explain it to me within the 7 days of the feast, then I will give you 30 linen garments and 30 changes of clothing. So Samson comes up with, I think, what he must have thought was a clever plan to enrich himself, and that is he proposes this riddle. And he says, if you solve the riddle, you 30 men, my companions, I'll give you 30 linen garments and 30 changes of clothing. In other words, one for each of them. Verse 14, but if you cannot explain it to me, then you shall give me 30 linen garments and 30 changes of clothing. And they said to him, pose your riddle, that we may hear it. So on the other hand, he says, if you can't explain it to me, then you have to give me 30 linen garments and 30 changes of clothing. Now notice that the risk is mostly on Samson. He is one man, and yet if they answer his riddle, he has to give them 30 linen garments and 30 changes of clothing. Now they are 30. So if they lose, they'll each be responsible for one linen garment, one change of clothing apiece. Not really much for them, but it'd be a lot for Samson if he lost. But Samson figures he can't lose. Now, it seems, too, that Samson's family is rather wealthy. Samson's giving this large celebration, and the Philistines are glad. His father is glad to marry to them. So even though Israel is an enslaved people at this time, it appears Manoah's family is quite wealthy among the Israelites. And so they think that Samson's good for it. So they agree to this proposal, this wager over this riddle. Verse 14, so he said to them, out of the eater came something to eat, and out of the strong came something sweet. Now for 3 days they could not explain the riddle. So his riddle has to do with the carcass of the lion with the honey coming out of it. Out of the eater came something to eat, and out of the strong came something sweet. Now you have to admit that's a stumper. What in the world does that mean? Well, if you didn't know the story of the lion with the honey in it, you wouldn't be able to figure it out. And sure enough, for 3 days of the 7 days of the feast, they're stumped. And they realize 4 more days aren't really going to help. They have little hope of solving this riddle. Now notice that this is a rather clever plan that Samson has. His problem is that he doesn't reckon with the low character of the Philistines. And that's why an Israelite boy like him has no business marrying a Philistine woman in the first place. But with that one oversight, Samson's plan is rather clever. It should have worked if the Philistines had been at all honest. So Samson acts like a musclehead, but he's certainly not dumb. He's clever in his own way. He's just totally self-focused. He's just totally caught up in himself. But he's not dumb. He can be quite clever, we see, as he is here. And these Philistines realize they're in trouble. Verse 15, "But it came to pass on the seventh day that they said to Samson's wife, 'Entice your husband, that he may explain the riddle to us, or else we will burn you and your father's house with fire. Have you invited us in order to take what is ours? Is that not so?'" So here it says it came to pass on the seventh day. But that is what the Hebrew says, but that doesn't appear to be right. Now in the Septuagint, the Greek translation of the Old Testament, it actually says on the fourth day. And seven appears to be a mistake in the Hebrew ancient script. Now remember that in ancient days they didn't have numerals like we have. Instead they used their letters, their alphabets, letters from their alphabet for numbers. It's like you've probably learned Roman numerals, where you use letters as numbers. Well, they did the same thing. They didn't have separate numbers. Now, not only that, but the ancient Hebrew used a different alphabet than the one that is in use today. Today they use the Syrian alphabet, which they adopted when they were captives in Assyria and in Babylon. But before that, they probably used the Phoenician alphabet that they got from Phoenicia, one of their next-door neighbors, before they went into captivity. Now, in the old alphabet, now it's not true in their modern Hebrew alphabet, so you won't find it there, but it seems that in the old alphabet, the letter for 7 and the letter for 4 looked quite similar. And so it seems at some point somebody mistook one for the other. Now, we can see it's a mistake by going back to verse 14. "Now, for 3 days they cannot explain the riddle." And then they go to his wife on the fourth day. So clearly, fourth is right, not seventh. Now notice what these groomsmen, these companions of Samson, do. They say, "Find out the riddle from your husband, entice him to tell it to you, and then tell it to us, or else we're going to burn you and your father's house with fire. Burn you and your whole father's family up." And how do they justify such a terrible thing? "Well, you've invited us to your party in order to take what is ours." So this is the great kind of people that Samson had for groomsmen. And I say that sarcastically. They aren't great at all. Samson's marrying into a violent people. And notice how offhandedly they say this. "Do this or we'll burn you up." Like this is the kind of thing that people in their culture did when they got mad at somebody. Is burn their whole family alive. What a terrible people, and yet Samson is marrying one of them. How unwise. Well, what does she do? Verse 16. "Then Samson's wife wept to him and said, 'You only hate me. You do not love me. You have posed a riddle to the sons of my people, but you have not explained it to me.' And he said to her, 'Look, I have not explained it to my father or my mother, so should I explain it to you?'" Now, what does Samson's wife do? Does she go to Samson with her problem? Does she tell him what's going on and say, "Samson, save me"? No, she doesn't trust him at all. She does exactly what they said and tries to entice him to tell her the answer. So she doesn't trust her husband. Now, what a great view she has of her husband and of how a wife should be. And then notice Samson's reply. "I didn't even tell my mom and dad. Why should I tell you?" Well, is that a good attitude to have toward your wife? No. No, biblically, when you get married, you're supposed to cleave to your wife and leave your father and mother. She is supposed to be more important to you than your parents. And yet, is that how Samson views it? Clearly not. They're his parents. She's just his wife. Well, that's a great attitude for a husband to have. So notice the great relationship that Samson has set up for himself. It's not a good one at all. What happens? Verse 17. "Now she had wept on him the 7 days while their feast lasted." Remember, she started on the fourth day and wept on him the whole rest of the time. "And it happened on the seventh day that he told her. because she pressed him so much. He finally got sick of it and said, "Fine, I'll tell you." Then she explained the riddle to the sons of her people. So what does she do? She runs right off to them and betrays him. Well, of course, she's trying to save herself and her family. She doesn't care about her new quote-unquote family, Samson. She's trying to save herself and her family from their threat. So she betrays him without a second thought. Again, a great wife he's picked out for himself. Verse 18, so the men of the city said to him on the seventh day before the sun went down, "What is sweeter than honey? And what is stronger than a lion?" And he said to them, "If you had not plowed with my heifer, you would not have solved my riddle." So the sun is about to go down on the seventh day, and it seems Samson goes to them and says, "All right, tell me the riddle now or you lose." And they told it. The sweet thing is the honey, the strong one is the lion. What is sweeter than honey? What is stronger than a lion, they say. And that was the answer to Samson's riddle. Well, he realizes there's no way they could have known it unless his wife had told him. She was the only one who knew. So notice Samson's reply, "If you had not plowed with my heifer, you would not have solved my riddle." Now remember, he came up with that on the spot. And that was pretty clever. That was a pretty clever answer. And again, we see that Samson, as strong as he was, he sometimes seems like a musclehead, but he's not. He's a clever guy in a lot of ways, just totally self-focused. But notice the slighting reference to his wife, his heifer, his cow. "You plowed with my cow. That's why you figured out my riddle." Well, clearly he has a high view of his wife. Well, what did he expect? He married a Philistine. He's surprised if she acts like a Philistine? He shouldn't be. But he's furious that his scheme failed. Verse 19, then the Spirit of the Lord came upon him mightily, and he went down to Ashkelon and killed 30 of their men, took their apparel, and gave the changes of clothing to those who had explained the riddle. So his anger was aroused, and he went back up to his father's house. So Samson acts in anger, but notice he does this through the Spirit. The Spirit comes upon him mightily. And he goes to Ashkelon, which was a different Philistine city from Timnah, and it was on the coast of the Mediterranean, one of their big cities. And then in Ashkelon, he kills 30 men, he strips them of their clothes, and then he takes those clothes back to fulfill the riddle and gives it to the men who had told him the answer. And he is so angry, he goes home in a huff and leaves his wife behind. Well, what does her father do? Verse 20, and Samson's wife was given to his companion who had been his best man. So she was given to his companion, his best man, as we would call it, although their customs were different than ours. Now, this was in strict accordance with the laws of Hammurabi, which were the common laws of the day. It had been around before God gave his law through Moses. And in many ways, God's law through Moses is a great improvement on the law of Hammurabi. But this was according to their law. Not only that, but it seems that their custom included a time for a woman to marry when she was marriageable, a window when she was supposed to get married. And so the father needs to marry her, and suddenly the man he had picked out isn't there, so he does it to the best man, the next best thing. Plus, I suppose it was a way of saving face after they had this celebration for her getting married. Then if she doesn't get married, it's egg on their faces, so he gives her to the best man. Well, notice the mess Samson has created for himself. And he never should have gone outside of Israel and outside of his own people to find a wife in the first place. But his trouble is only beginning. And we'll talk about what came next in our next study. So Samson wasn't satisfied with a good girl of Israel. He wanted a bad girl of the Philistines. He tried to be clever with wicked men. Pat himself on the back how smart he was, and yet he found out that, not surprisingly, wicked men don't play fair. His new wife is far from a true partner for him. She is as interested in herself as he is interested in himself. And he ends up with no wife and nothing but a burning desire for revenge. What a mistake it was for him to go to an ungodly woman for a marriage partner. Well, may God grant to his people the wisdom to choose a godly person to marry.
Samson, an Israelite with a Nazarite vow on him, ignores his obligation and relationship to the Lord. Deception and betrayal ensues. Today, we live in the dispensation of grace, but it is never a good idea to disregard our relationship with God. Thank you, Nathan, for your lesson on A Wedding for Samson. On our next program, Nathan will continue his teaching series on the book of Judges with A Cycle of Revenge. Thank you for joining us today. Our hope is that as you study God's Word more and more, you know and love God more and more. For more information on the program, to hear past programs, and for other downloadable material that Nathan has produced, please visit our website at knowinggodintheword.org. We also send out a weekly email newsletter in which Nathan does the same thing he does on this radio program, going verse by verse through the Bible and then discussing what it means. Email Nathan at nathan@knowinggodintheword.org and ask to be placed on this mailing list. You can also write to us with Bible questions or comments. For more Bible study literature by Nathan and other Bible teachers, including Seed and Bread Bible studies, please visit the Word of Truth Ministry at seedandbread.org or write to the Word of Truth Ministry, P.O. Box 1609, Canyon Country, California, 91386. Although your donations are always appreciated, you will not be solicited for funds in any way when you write, so feel free to contact us. I'm your host, Bob Juneau, with Bible teacher Nathan Johnson. So long for now, but we look forward to you joining us next week on Knowing God in the Word.